League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
We look at everything from the performance on the field that we're watching these games each and every week to strength of schedule to quality wins. And then the losses do come into discussion. They are a factor as we study the resume. They're on the table for discussion and we do analyze those losses. So do they matter? Yes, they do matter. Many times when we are looking at comparable teams, it's hard to differentiate. And at those times through our protocol, the commissioners have said we give you four metrics to look at. Conference championships, strength of schedule, head-to-head matchups, and results against common opponents. And it's subjective based upon each of the 13 members of the selection committees. When we look at comparable teams, conference championships will be a factor in that equation for separation.
How do you put in Bama and you don't put in Auburn? I know it's 3-1 losses, but if you're a Bama fan, you're rooting for Auburn this week. I mean, I know you can't do it, and everyone says, oh, I would never do it. I'd rather die than do that.
I think if you look at what the committee is going to be looking at, Ohio State on paper would have the advantage over Bama. The only way that Bama would go in over Ohio State is if collectively that committee said, we know Ohio State's a conference champ and Alabama's not. We just think that Alabama's better. So let's put Alabama in. That would be really the only way that they could put Alabama in. The difference is Ohio State had 3 wins in the final rankings over teams that were in the top 10. Alabama's best win right now is over LSU, who's sitting down at 17.
It was what I expected with the teams that really matter the most here, which is Alabama at 5, Ohio State at 8. I say they matter the most because the rest of it's pretty simple. Like, if the top 4 teams win, that's your playoff.
Ohio State could be sitting there punctuating its resume with a win against a top 4 team. And don't forget that Ohio State also has a top 10 win against Penn State, assuming they stay ranked in the top 10. And they also beat a ranked team in Michigan State. The question is, would those 3 wins help to negate or compensate for giving up 55 points in the loss to Iowa and the home loss to Oklahoma?
Kevin Love sold it and hit it for 3. Love sent it for 3. Love is in the air. Crowder steps into a 3. Line drive it. Kevin Love! He's everywhere now. The omnipresent Kevin Love. LeBron with an easy steal. The trailer is Love. Oh, he is going to pop a shot on him. Dwayne Wade to the hole with ease. D-Wade says, sorry to do it to you, Heat. Kevin Love wide open. Got again! The audacity! Finally missed one, but stayed after it. Sends it up, and down! Kevin Love!
Here comes LeBron, changing gears. Bumping and missing. Dying is fouled. He's going to get a tech. And he's out of here! LeBron James has just been ejected.
Frustration, that's all that is.
That's the first ejection of LeBron James' career.
Don't be deceived by the final score. Cavs led by as many as 34 and cruise home to a one and go winner.
I got fouled and showed my frustration to the ref. He sent me to the locker room. I said what I had to say and I moved on, but he decided I should get 2 of them. It is what it is. We got the win and that's what's most important. I'm surprised I got 2 in a row, you know, because I said what I had to say and I was moving on and he decided to throw me out, but, you know, it is what it is.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is the extravaganza once again right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's going on? Hope you're having an outstanding day. And as always, remember, we are Toledo's sports leader. Did Eli Manning just get Bernie Kosar? That is going to be the subject of the monologue as we get started today. We have a lot to talk about. Don't get me wrong. A lot to talk about, including the college football playoff rankings, as the committee last night came out with their penultimate list of the top 4, final 4, I should say, and really the top 10 that everybody is looking at. And I've got a lot of very definitive opinions on that. You just heard many of them. Of course, who'd you have in that montage? You had Kirby Hokut. He's the chair of the committee. Todd McShay. The rest are just analysts, right? McShay.
Exactly. Herb Street, Brad Edwards, Heather Dinich, a whole bunch of analysts analyzing it all.
Only Kirby spoke for the committee, correct? Did anybody else give interviews?
As of this point, I haven't noticed anybody else really giving the interviews. They're leaving that to the chair. Maybe we'll hear some after next week's rankings, but I'm not sure.
I wonder how many people actually know who these committee members are. Because I do this for a living. I cover these things, and I just asked Kush a little while ago. I said, you know what? What are the names? Because I knew Gene Smith, the Ohio State AD.
Right, he's one of them.
On the committee, and I found that very bizarre. How can a team, a school, I should say, that is actively a part of all of this, be represented on the committee by their AD?
Talk about
a bias in terms of ranking.
Sure.
So I wanted to know if that was going on, in any other circumstances. And
yep.
I don't think I've ever heard ESPN talking about the names of the members. I don't think I've heard Fox Sports or CBS
nope.
Sports or anybody saying, hey, by the way, who makes these calls? We always say the committee. I heard Joel Klatt, who's a Fox analyst, today say, and he tweeted that the committee is a hot mess. What a terrible job they did. And then I heard somebody else say the committee really right on their game, and if these top four teams win, it's clear that they are the four deserving to be in the playoff. And everybody just refers to it as generically the committee.
The committee.
And come to find out, now that I have a list in front of me, and I'll talk more about this later, but 1, 2, 3, 4 Power Five conference programs have active ADs on the committee.
Yep.
And that's a problem for me. Now, many of these are, and just I'll just finish this off before I get into the Eli Manning story. Gene Smith of Ohio State, as I mentioned, is on the committee. Dan Radakovich, Clemson's athletic director, of course, they're number one right now. He's on the committee. Rob Mullins, the athletic director at Oregon, Pac-12, of course, on the committee, and Arkansas athletic director Jeff Long. Now, these are all active. Everybody else is former or they're, in the example of Chris Howard, he's the president of Robert Morris University, which is not a part of this discussion. That's okay. I forgot. I'm sorry. Kirby Hokut is the Texas Tech. So five, Jim, not four, five active athletic directors of Power
yep.
Five schools are all on this committee, counting Chairman Kirby Hokut.
And I'm hearing some things, and I'm going to try to confirm this for you, that apparently Gene Smith is recusing himself from voting.
There's been some discussion of that's what made me think of this,
to say how
many others are like Gene Smith.
Right, because Dan Radovich definitely needs to be one of them.
Absolutely. And Long and Mullins don't have teams in this fight right now, but again, they are
sure.
representatives, they're ADs
yep.
of Power Five conference schools, and to me that... they should be recused from this as well.
Can I just say one other thing in terms of...
Think about it. There's a Pac-12 school and there's a Big
yep.
12 school who they want their conference for all kinds of reasons to be represented here, and they're going to go to bat for them based on loyalty
yep.
and conference affiliation and not necessarily objectivity.
And
they all should be recused from this.
Yeah, and actually looking at this list, a little more depth of thinking about it from that perspective, there is an active AD representing each of the five conferences.
I don't like it. I don't like it. That's wrong.
Here's the one that I have the biggest question mark in my head next to. Why is Chris Howard, the president of Robert Morris, a 1AA FCS school, on this committee? That makes no sense to me.
I actually don't have a problem with that. Why does that make no sense?
Because they're 1AA. They're not even involved in this.
Partisan.
Okay,
Jim,
I see where you're going with that. Partisan
guy. He would be objective in evaluating all of these teams and not have a rooting interest in it. Just as many of the former active coaches and ADs and so on and so forth. See, I'm fine with former Notre Dame coach and Stanford coach Tyrone Willingham being on this. He is not a coach at either of those universities now, and I can believe in his objectivity.
Yeah.
I can believe in Steve Weiberg, former USA Today college football reporter. You might say, why does the president of Robert Morris have a spot? Why does this particular reporter, out of all the
reporters? Fair enough.
They're looking for people that they know that are going to be objective, that don't have ties to current universities in Division 1AA or 1A. Or,
okay.
Excuse me. In B, I want to say BCS. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say FBS.
FBS.
They're looking for people that don't have ties to this
yeah.
that are going to be objective, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Tom Jernstedt, former NCAA executive vice president. I'm okay with Bobby Johnson, former Vanderbilt coach. Again, former being the words here in all of these, you know, the operative words.
Yes.
Mentioned Chris Howard, president of Robert Morris. Herb Deramidi, am I saying that one right?
I think
former
so.
Former CMU coach, so yep. Mac. Former Central Michigan coach.
That's good to have mid-majors represented some
sure.
way in there.
That's why I don't have any problem with the Robert Morris guy.
Yeah.
Former Southern Mississippi coach, Jeff Bauer. Okay, former your Hokies, Frank Beamer.
And suddenly I want to see what his votes are, just out of sheer personal morbid curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, former Vatek coach, well-respected. You know, I think his school isn't impacted here. And obviously, you might say, well, he's got a tie to the conference. Okay, yeah, but it's not active. He doesn't have a dog in this fight, personally, the way Jeff Long of Arkansas, Kirby Hokut of Texas Tech, Rob Mullins of Oregon, Dan Radakovich of Clemson, and Gene Smith of Ohio State, too. Their conferences are all actively looking for spots in this Final Four. And then, again, Kirby Hokut was the last member of that I was talking about. So, in my mind, if you have to recuse yourself, you should never have been on it in the first place.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Non-Power 5 conference representatives or non-active representatives. If you're the former Ohio State athletic director, I'm okay.
Yes.
You know, maybe Jim Tressel, although, you know, kind of resigning in some modified state of disgrace the way things ended there. Maybe that's not the best thing for the NCAA, but you understand the point.
Yes. Yes,
put
I do.
People like it. Lloyd Carr. Put Lloyd Carr.
There you go. You know?
So yeah, it's just very strange. You do have that weird dynamic of all of those five current athletic directors at Power 5 conference schools. The two that are most directly impacted by this are Clemson's AD and Ohio State's AD, because they are in the top four. Well, I'm sorry. Clemson is in the top four, and Ohio State is one of the teams perceived to be that if there's a loss by one of the top four this weekend on Championship Saturday, that they would be one of the teams that could leapfrog a whole bunch of others and get in.
No doubt.
To take down undefeated Wisconsin.
Yeah, and looking at this list, you know, the biggest thing that jumps out at me now is I agree with this concept. Everybody should have former something in their title to be as impartial as possible.
Or you know, current president of Robert Morris University. It's not FBS.
Right.
You know, and that's fine. In fact, does Robert Morris have football at all?
I don't even know if they have football. I know they're we know they have basketball, but good question. I don't even know if they play. I'm assuming play.
For some reason, I think of them like I think of Xavier University down in Cincinnati. They just have basketball. They do not have football. I don't know why. Maybe they do have football at Robert Morris, and I should be embarrassed by not knowing that. And if they do, then I am. Okay, we'll come back to that. That's going to be a big part of the second hour of the program's discussion. Coming up at 3:35, Dennis Manilov is going to join us to talk about LeBron being booted for the first time in his career. How about that? 14, 15 years in, never been ejected from a game. It happened last night. Going to talk a little bit about the NFL as well with Manilov, so NBA and NFL with him. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, like I said, we're going to have a lot of time for phone calls on the college football playoff ranking committee last night and what they came up with. But I want to go back and start and monologue on this. Eli Manning. Did Eli Manning just get Bernie Kosar by the New York Giants? No, they didn't cut him. Yes, the Browns, Bill Belichick back in 1993, did cut Bernie Kosar. But there are a lot of similarities here. And if you listen to some of the really emotional responses coming out of New York City, it's very similar to the way Browns fans reacted. And, Kush, I don't know, how old were you when that all went down in 93? Were you
12.
Around?
I was 12. Because I was born in 81, 93, so that's 12.
All right. Do you remember much of this at all as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I remember this.
Tears flowed freely from the cheeks or down the cheeks of Browns fans all over the country, particularly in Northeast Ohio, when Bernie Kosar was cut. And Bill Belichick cited diminishing skills as the reason for cutting him. And Belichick made a decision, which, of course, has been discussed many, many, many millions of times since 1993. He made a point of saying that, look, we can't just bench Bernie Kosar. He's Bernie freaking Kosar here. It will be the fans will go ballistic in the stands every time there's an incompletion thrown by Todd Philcox, I think is who it was that they ended up making the start immediately after that.
Yes, it was Philcox first, then it became Testaverde.
Testaverde after that, right. Every time one of our guys makes a mistake, the fans are going to be screaming Bernie's name. It wouldn't be fair to him. It wouldn't be fair to the starter. We've got to get rid of him. He can't be the backup here. he can go be a backup somewhere else. And the fans went crazy saying, oh my God, do you know who this is? This is Bernie Kosar. This is local hero. This is All-American at the University of Miami who wanted to come to Cleveland. Nobody ever wants to go to Cleveland. Nobody wants to play with the Browns. Are you kidding? Nobody ever wants to do that. He's from Boardman, which is about an hour outside of Cleveland, and he made a specific request to be taken by the Browns in the supplemental draft, and bang, that automatically made him, you know, a hometown hero. Then the fact that he played pretty damn good, pretty well, if you want me to be grammatically correct, and I always like to be grammatically correct, played pretty damn well, made some Pro Bowls, led his team to two back-to-back AFC championship games. We all know what happened with the drive and the fumble. Could have been in two Super Bowls. He was every bit what they wanted him to be. But there was a time that came in 1992 and in 1993 where, quite frankly, the production did start to dip considerably. And it was up to Bill Belichick to figure out what to do about that in 1993. And the decision he made was, we can't get this done with this offense as it's currently constructed. I can't just put him on the bench, so I've got to make this move. Now, Bill Belichick, which even to this day, as you know, is very curt, very direct, doesn't like to elaborate on things, doesn't like to talk to the media about his decisions, just does his thing. Well, he did it even more abruptly and a little bit more coldly, perhaps, than even he realized at the time how it would come out when he cited diminishing skills. It basically said, this guy can't play anymore. And it killed Browns fans. Killed them. Bernie Kosar became a martyr. How dare somebody treat our beloved hometown hero in such a way? Now, history would go on to prove, history in the form of the next two or three years, that Bill Belichick was right. Bernie Kosar was never pursued by 31 other NFL teams to be their starting quarterback. Oh my God, the Browns made Kosar available. They just caught him. Get him, get him, get him! Didn't happen. Ended up as a backup. Ended up getting a Super Bowl ring, by the way, backing up Troy Aikman in Dallas. Good for him. It's fantastic. But he never started in the National Football League again as a starter, other than as an injury replacement. Fast forward now to 2017 and the New York Giants. Eli Manning has started 210 consecutive football games since being drafted in the 2003 quarterback class with Roethlisberger and Rivers, I believe it was.
Yeah, and oh my God, is it that long ago already? Wow.
That was the year LeBron James came into the National Basketball Association. I believe it was 03, right? Roethlisberger, Manning, Rivers, and wasn't there another? What was the other? I feel like there were,
Carson Palmer. Is the other one I think you're
who I'm thinking of.
Well, then we have the
Carson
wrong.
Carson Palmer wasn't in that class.
Well, then we're on the wrong draft because I'm looking at the 03 draft, and that's when Carson Palmer went number one.
All right. Well, then maybe it was was it 01?
It was 04. It was, we were off by a year. It was 04.
It was 04. Okay. I was going to say, no, Carson Palmer was definitely not.
Yeah, there's
in that
Eli
draft.
Number one. Big
we know
Ben
what happened
11,
now about
yada,
how
yada,
Archie
yada.
Engineered it. He did not want to go to San Diego, would not go to San Diego. And so, of course, they engineered it where they worked out the trade with San Diego, and Philip Rivers went west, and Eli Manning got to go to New York where he wanted to be. Roethlisberger, I want to say, was 11th overall?
Yes, he was 11th.
Trying to remember. All right. Am I missing a quarterback?
I
feel like there was another quarterback in that draft.
J.P. Lossman went to Buffalo at 22, and then we're into round two, and I'm not going to care.
All right. Well, those three guys are probable, possible. I'll stay with possible Hall of Famers. Roethlisberger is a guarantee. Not only the crazy career numbers, greatest quarterback numbers in the history of the Steelers, even though Bradshaw's got the four rings, Roethlisberger's got two of his own and has just been sensational. Manning has the two Super Bowl rings. He is probable. I would call Roethlisberger a lock. I would call Manning a probable because he's 2-0 against Tom Brady in Super Bowls and has, while his numbers will never compare to some of the other guys in history, the two rings carry a lot of weight. There's only one two-time Super Bowl champion quarterback that is not in the Hall of Fame. Do you know who it is, Kush?
Oh, goodness. It's
Jim Plunkett.
I was going to say, I had it in my head it was a Raider, but I couldn't put my finger on it real quick.
Yeah, I didn't give you much time there, only because I'm looking at the clock, and we got Maniloff coming, but that was Plunkett. So anyway, and then Rivers, to me, just lots of great all-time stats, but never a playoff winner, never a Super Bowl player. I don't even think the Chargers ever made an AFC championship game in Rivers' tenure, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, I think they made one. I think they made one and lost to the Patriots, but who hasn't?
That's why, for me, he's not a probable, he's a questionable. As far as Ken. But anyway, my point to all of this is Eli Manning, starting 210 games ever since he was drafted into the NFL in the 04 draft, was given the opportunity by outgoing, and it's not been made official, of course, but I think everybody knows Ben McAdoo is going to be fired. Outgoing head coach Ben McAdoo saying, you know what, Eli, things aren't really going swimmingly for us this year. We're not going to the playoffs. We need to get some of the other guys ready. You got to see what I have. Can Geno Smith play here? Can Austin Webb play here? What are we going to do here? We got to find out if these guys can play. But I don't want to mess up your streak either, so I'll give you the choice. You can either start and keep the streak alive, but know that the other guys are going to play some, or we can just, you know, let me start the other guys and see what happens here. And Eli Manning, given that choice, said it would, and I give him a lot of credit for this, by the way, it would simply tarnish the streak to start for the sake of the streak, and then to step aside and not be the person who tries to win the game. And I think that's very admirable.
Now we're just kind of thought it's best is give Geno the start, and I'll back him up. I'll be a good teammate. You know, I don't like it, but it's part of football. You handle it, and do my job. You know, to go out there knowing you're coming out, that's, you know, I just didn't think that's how do you prepare? Hey, start this week. I was going to play the first half, and Geno was going to start the second half. But where, you know, eventually they're going to start working in Davis, and I thought I was just starting and playing to keep a streak alive, and I didn't think that's the right thing.
How hard is this hitting you emotionally?
I'll stop it there. And by the way, I think I called him Austin Webb for some reason. It's Davis Webb, and I think I combined him and made Austin Davis, if you remember Austin Davis. Anyway, Davis Webb is going to play some. So kudos to Eli Manning. But my point to all of this is if you listen to the Giants fans, they are crying, how can you do this to a guy who has meant so much to this franchise? How can you do this to this embarrassment, this public humiliation to our two-time Super Bowl-winning quarterback, who's a legend with the New York Giants franchise? And Kush, 6 weeks ago, if you listen to sports radio in New York City, every fan in town was killing him.
Yep.
Because Eli Manning has been terrible.
Yes, he has.
Now, it has not been just his fault that he is terrible.
Very true.
In much the same way that Deshaun Kizer, not comparing Kizer to Eli.
I know what you're trying to say here, but.
But, you know, Kizer's performance being up and down, mostly down in his rookie year, is largely a result of a terrible offensive line, a terrible receiving core, et cetera, et cetera. And Eli Manning is plagued by the same type of thing this year in New York. But he, for the last couple of years, has slipped from the, you know, second tier down into the third or fourth tier pantheon of quarterbacks in this league. It was far and away time, probably a year too late for the Giants to say, we need to move on. And now with just five games left in this regular season, if they start the likes of Davis Webb and Geno Smith, neither one of them is probably their quarterback of the future, but they could lose the rest of their games with them starting, in which case they could indeed draft the quarterback of their future. Right now they're third in terms of draft order behind the Browns and the Niners. Garoppolo starts for the Niners this week. It's conceivable that the Niners could win a game or two with Garoppolo and thus drop them down further in the order behind the Giants, who would now be starting Webb and or Geno Smith. So they could be putting themselves in the position to be second in the draft order to get either Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold, if that is who they believe are the is the quarterback of their future.
And that's assuming those guys even come out. We've heard those little rumors because of the possibility of the Browns being
Darnold, number one.
Darnold
addressed that yesterday. Darnold addressed that yesterday and said absolutely not.
Okay.
He said, if I'm ready to go pro, I'm going pro. I'm not going to be chased back into the college game because I don't like the team drafting at the top of the
draft. Got it. Then he'll be pulling a John Elway with the Baltimore Colts thing. Got it.
So there's a lot of ground to till there, and we will till it. But I want to get some room here for our friend Dennis Maniloff. He's going to be joining us to talk about some of these things and more after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day is a pretty good one, and it has to do with those Golden State Warriors. They lost on Monday to the Sacramento Kings. Lowly Sacramento puts their record at a pedestrian 15-6. If that seems like a lot of losses early for Golden State, it is. As for perspective, the Warriors' sixth loss of the season in the past 3 years came on the following dates: January 16th, March 6th, and January 6th. All the last 3 years, the dates they lost their sixth game of the NBA seasons. Now it comes on November, what was Monday, Kush?
27th.
November 27th. So that's a pretty amazing wild stat. All right, we'll get a quick time out here. We'll come back and talk with Maniloff right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I got fouled and showed my frustration to the ref. He sent me to the locker room. I said what I had to say, and I moved on, but he decided I should get two of them. It is what it is. We got the win, and that's what's most important. I'm surprised I got two in a row, you know, because I said what I had to say, and I was moving on, and he decided to throw me out, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, he did decide to send him packing. He said what he had to say. The problem is some of the things that he had to say included, according to the official, words of the four-letter variety, things you can't do. If you get one for chasing him down and throwing what the ref called an air punch, which he did, which is kind of showing up the ref, that can get you the first one. If you then follow that up with enough curse words, that's going to get you your second one. Joining us to talk about LeBron's first ejection, a little bit on the NBA and the Cavaliers' big winning streak, kind of calming the nerves of many with their slow start to the season, and a little bit on the NFL as well, as our good friend Dennis Maniloff. D-Man, how are you, brother?
What's up, Bob France? So much for my assessment a couple weeks ago that the Cavs were old and slow.
No, actually, I think they still are old and slow. But you know what? There is also a lot of talent there, too. The question is can their old, slow bones take the pounding of 82 and then be strong enough for you know, May and or April, May, and June, which is when it really matters? That's the question.
Well, I think that's where Isaiah Thomas comes in, and to an extent Tristan Thompson, because, you know, the Cavs can look at it as reinforcements on the way if they do need to shorten the season if some of these guys. But what they're showing is what a veteran group can do when it's been together for a little bit. You know, they're learning each other each day. And, you know, with some of these younger teams they're playing, specifically the 76ers the other night, they're playing chess while the other younger teams are playing checkers. And here's the key. If the Cavs get off to a decent start, they're really tough to beat. And I know that, you know, that sounds simplistic, but if the Cavs can hold their own early and they don't get run out of a building by the younger legs, they're really tough to handle.
Dennis Maniloff covers the Cavaliers and more out in Cleveland for Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. What did you think about LeBron's ejection yesterday? In some ways, you know, Dennis, because he's going to be much more hesitant, or Ty Lue is going to be much more hesitant to give him those designated rest days because the NFL changed the schedule, reduced the number of back-to-backs and all those sorts of things, and three games in four nights, all of those kinds of things. So, you know what? He got a break. It was almost like a day off because it came early enough that it was almost getting a full day's rest.
Yeah, he'd already stuffed the stat sheet anyway. You know, in one sense, I don't blame LeBron. Okay, in my opinion, you know me. I'm a LeBron guy. I just think he gets hacked a lot and hit
guy.
A lot.
You're building the statue, bro.
Well, you know, here's the thing.
You're the sculptor. I can't wait to see what you come up with when this whole thing is done.
I saw a stat somewhere. You know, he's like one of the top three in the NBA, if not number one in paint points, and 20th in free throw attempts. I mean, the guy gets hit a lot and doesn't get the calls. And I know every NBA player can make that claim, but I think LeBron has a right to make the claim louder than others. Now, having said that, I saw what happened, and, you know, he was really vociferous, and he did make, you know, the move toward the official. It's not like he was going to bump him or anything, but it was an aggressive move. And yes, there were F-bombs. By the way, you know, I don't want to throw in the few NBA players who don't swear on the court, but let's put it this way. The vast majority of those guys swear in any sport, probably. So that's not the
but
part of it.
But do they swear directly at the officials while being angry? That's the question.
Yeah.
Because that's what got
them. That's the thing. I don't, you know, I did find it strange that he only got one technical before the ejection. And the ref even said in the pool report afterwards, you know, that it was just one tech. I guess he just didn't have time to get the second tech up before he made up his mind that LeBron needs to get out of there. But listen, if LeBron were a repeat offender like Draymond Green or those types who get kicked out, you know, how many times a year, then you say, okay, what's going on, LeBron, slow your roll or whatever. But I think he's entitled to one detonation that leads to an ejection in 15 seasons as an NBA player. So ultimately, I don't have a problem with it. And honestly, if somehow, some way, it buys him a call at a critical time, you know, late in the season or in the playoffs somewhere, then, you know, maybe it was worth it.
Are you surprised that this is the first one in 15 years? Because I have seen enough of LeBron James histrionics and complaints on calls that could have warranted a single tech in first quarters and another one later on in the third quarter that could have resulted in the second tech that would have gotten him. In other words, while you are 100% correct that big, strong guys like Shaquille O'Neal and LeBron James, guys who are just, you know, like larger than life, get hit more often and shrug them off because of their power and size that they don't get the call. You're right about that. I think I could also say with a certain degree of confidence that because of the status that a guy like LeBron has, he doesn't always get that first tech when he very easily could, that a guy like Draymond or somebody else is going to get, and thus isn't going to get the second one later that might have led to an ejection or two in the 14, 15 years that he's been in the league.
That's a tremendous point. There's a juxtaposition there because you have, I think, LeBron's reputation and his clean slate up until last night, but it's still clean, one out of 15
seasons. Oh, yeah,
this
isn't going to change anything.
That has helped him enormously. His status coming into the league, you know, his talent level has definitely helped him when it comes to his ability to plead his case and the referees not teeing him up. Okay, so there's that part of it. And then on the flip side, the opposite part is he would say, I don't need to be squawking and I don't need to be complaining if you call 90% of the times I get hit as actual fouls. So I see both sides of it. But yeah, to your point, his reputation has helped him as he goes along in the league.
Dennis, I'm not going to make a big deal of the 8-game winning streak, or is it 9 now? Is it 8 or 9?
It's 9.
It's 9. Okay, thank you. Any more than we should have made of the really, really slow and ugly start? Because it's still November. It was November then, and it's November now. So big picture, you know, we don't really have a whole lot to talk about there. But I do want to talk about Derrick Rose, and I'm going to talk about the impact that this could have. Jim Cushing and I were talking about this Monday, I think, or maybe it was yesterday, Dennis, that this whole thing is, if he never comes back, it'll be too soon. Jose Calderon, in my opinion, is a better backup point guard for Isaiah Thomas when Isaiah Thomas comes around, if and hoping he does come around. He's a veteran. He's not as needy. He is not as, controversial, if you will. You don't need the drama that comes with Derrick Rose for a guy who, in the 7 games that he played, averaged 1.4 assists, I think, as a point guard that's got shooters and scorers all around him, and he can't find more than 1.4 passes a night that lead to buckets. I don't want him. I didn't want him when they signed him. I didn't like him 3 years ago or 4 years ago or whatever it was when he was taking night after night off and he told the media, leave me alone, I'm going to skip games because I don't want to be sore when I go to my son's graduation party a few years from now, and I don't want to be sore when I go to meetings after I retire just because something I used to do. You're making $20 million a year then or whatever the heck it was, and he was just not didn't want to be sore later. So guys like that I have a very, very, very short leash for, and I'll be honest with you, if he's really contemplating retirement, I would encourage him. As a matter of fact, I'll bake him a cake.
Yeah, I mean, Rose is in a predicament, obviously. He's made his own bed now, and he's got all that money with Adidas tied up into him continuing to play. So he has to make that decision. Does he want to forfeit, you know, what is it, $80-some million in that shoe deal.
I think 70 is what he's got left. I think it's 70.
Okay. And, you know, but it's a ton of money, okay? It's generational money. And, you know, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for him to come back to the Cavaliers. I think the Cavs would allow him to come back, but they would basically say, look, you know, no more of this. I mean, you can't go away again. You can't have these second thoughts about your career or whatever, no matter what your injury history is. And, yes, we feel sorry about your injuries and all that, but we can't have this again. So if you're going to come back, it has to be for at least the remainder of the season for as long as we go. And so Rose has to make up his mind, you know, am I going to be able to commit to a full season or what remains of a season? Here's the damning part of it, though. You know, what the Cavs have said to Derrick Rose through their play is, we don't miss you, Derrick. You know what? Next man up, next Calderon up.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron would say they've got 4 point guards that could back up Isaiah Thomas, including him and D. Wade and Calderon, maybe J.R. every once in a while. I mean, they could find the point guards anywhere on this team, seemingly, because so many guys handle the ball. So they haven't missed Derrick Rose a bit, and that's evidenced by what they've done since he's, you know, disappeared on them. So, if you know, the onus is on Rose here. If he really wants to play, he's got to commit for, you know, for the remainder of the season. He obviously has to prove, you know, that he's worth the time and the issues. I think, again, the Cavs would take him back, but it would be obviously a zero-tolerance policy from there on out.
I'm going to ask you, though, to answer the same question that I did at the beginning of my question, and I said good riddance. If he comes back at all, it's too soon. Or if he never comes back, it's too soon. Do you want him back? You just explained what you think they will do and how it could play out, but in your personal opinion, do you want him back?
I don't, and I was the guy who was in favor of him coming because I thought it was low risk, high reward if he could recapture some of his form. But when you see what his game is built around and you see, as you say, the lack of assists, granted not much court time, but still not a lot of assists, and you see what the Cavs are doing now in terms of their ball movement, their cutting, their unselfish play, you realize that Derrick Rose kind of doesn't fit. And his jumper is erratic. So, no, I'm not in favor of Rose coming back. And deep down, if you got the Cavs on Truth Serum, knowing that they have Thomas potentially coming back, I mean, potentially, you never know coming off of it, but assuming he does, knowing they have that coming, I don't think they necessarily want Rose back either.
Dennis Maniloff joining us, talking about a few NBA and NFL notes now. As I shift gears, I want to ask you about Toledo's favorite quarterback in the NFL right now, and that would be DeShone Kizer. Central Catholic grad had a pretty good day in a very bad loss, yet another. The dream is still alive for people like me who just want to see the entire operation blown up, with the exception of Kizer, by the way. 0-11, 0-16 is within reach. I want to see it happen. But Kizer, a bright spot, and maybe things getting brighter if Josh Gordon is, I don't know, 1/7 of what he used to be. It might be an improvement over anybody catching passes on the Browns roster right now.
No doubt, Bob. You know, it's very, it seems to be, I don't know, I don't want to use the word sexy, but it seems to be like in fashion around here to bash Kizer at every turn. Because it seems like a lot of people have made up their mind that he's not the, quote, franchise quarterback. Well, when I do my quarterback reports, I don't look at whether he's a franchise quarterback or not. I'm looking at the game itself. Okay, I don't want to look too far behind, and I certainly don't want to look ahead. I just say, what did he do in this particular game? And against the Bengals, he played pretty darn well. I gave him a B, and, you know, I thought he was solid. I thought it was arguably his best game. Stacked up against the Detroit game 2 weeks earlier. So that's two good games out of the last three. Obviously had the stink bomb in between against Saxonville. But I liked what I saw from Kizer, and yet you'd think I gave him an A++ and I was the easiest grader in the history of the world. people, oh, yeah, you think he's a franchise quarterback. He stinks. No, I never said that. That's not the point here. The point is, what does he look like week to week? Mm-hmm. And I think you give the guy his due when he delivers, and you crack him when he doesn't. But you don't have to take this existential look every time a guy plays a game. You can do a micro analysis instead of macro all the time. So hats off to Kizer, and I'll tell you what else, or helmets off. I'll tell you what else, Bob. I give Kizer a ton of credit for going out there and playing well after his head coach stormed out on the field pregame and slobber hug, you know, whatever you want to call it, AJ McCarron.
Yeah.
What a ridiculous spectacle that is. And, he, you know, you talk about disrespecting the quarterback that you have. You know, here's Hugh Jackson. He's desperate for victories. He's 0-10 going into the game. And, you know, he's sitting there hugging and kissing and all this stuff with A.J. McCarron, the guy that he tried to get to usurp or supplant the DeShone Kizer. And on top of that, Jackson's doing it on the field before the game when he needs Kizer to play well. So, you know, hats off to Kizer for sticking it to Jackson there and saying, all right, you hate me so much, you're in love with McCarron, I'm going to go out and play well.
Yeah, and he really did. And what did you make of the fact that the owner was a part of that too? Jimmy Haslam was out there as well playing grab butt with McCarron.
It's disgusting, Bob. It's disgusting. You know, Hugh Jackson, listen, I've tried to be even-handed with him, but it's getting harder and harder. Not just the losses, Bob, but some of the things he says. You know, I had a video for Cleveland.com the other day where, you know, he coming off his Monday presser, he said the Browns were, quote, not equipped like that, end of quote, to handle multiple plays in 20 seconds from the 11-yard line at the end of the half, from the opponent 11-yard line. I'm like, what do you mean not equipped? You can't run more than one play, one non-spike play in 20 seconds when other teams in the league run two, three, maybe four, and you say you're not equipped. What is that in week 12 of an NFL season? So week after week, Jackson comes up with goofball stuff. But here's the bottom line. He has made it perfectly, abundantly clear that he's in a battle with the front office, that he and the front office have a Grand Canyon chasm between them, okay? We get it, Hugh. You've made that clear. So every chance he gets, though, even though he's made it clear, every chance he gets, he has to show us. And this past Sunday, the optics were, all right, I want to make sure that Sashi and Di Podesta and all those guys recognize that the owner has my back, that he's still, you know, he's in my corner, or I'm in his corner, and we're together on this. And he also, I think, wanted to send the message that he was the one who tried to get McCarron, and he was, by extension or by intimation, he was overruled. So, yeah, it was all part of a plan, and it's just gotten ridiculous now with Jackson trying to prove that he's out there going rogue, you know, all by himself. Oh, woe, you know, woe is I, Hugh Jackson. Oh, they don't give me any groceries. Oh, I'm not equipped to do anything.
It sounds like I know what you want to happen.
Football to win. Ah, shut up, Hugh. Just Dennis, go win a game.
Dennis, I'm short on time here. It sounds like I know what you want to happen, but I'm going to ask you to predict what does happen here of these three scenarios, given that irreparable relationship between what's the divorce term? What am I looking for there when you get divorced? Because irreconcilable, that's what I wanted to say. Yeah. Irreconcilable differences between Jackson and the staff and in the front office. Three scenarios. Jimmy Haslam blows out the front office and keeps Jackson. Sashi Brown and Di Podesta goodbye. Brings in maybe Peyton Manning. A lot of people have talked about that. Or he gets rid of Hugh Jackson and his staff and keeps his front office analytics guys, or he blows out the whole lot of them and starts over. What do you think the most likely scenario is? I suppose there could be a fourth and blows out. No, there isn't. I think it's impossible. I don't think there's a possible chance in hell that he brings back the entire crew as is with this sort of dysfunction between them. So it's one of those first three.
Right. I think if Peyton Manning turns down the job, and I believe he was offered football control of the team, and he's weighing it now, and maybe he has already turned it down privately, but if Manning ultimately decides not to come to Cleveland, then I think my guess is Haslam sticks with Jackson and blows out the front office. That's my guess. But if Manning comes in, then, you know, there's no way Manning's inheriting any of this stuff. He's bringing all his people in. So that's how I see it.
That's fair. That's a good answer. Because if Manning does come in, he's going to want to control it from the get-go, and he's going to hire his people in all phases. I completely agree. But you're saying if Manning says no, then Haslam casts his lot with Jackson and blows out Brown and DePodesta.
Yes, I think okay. That's what's going to happen.
Very interesting. We'll see if they keep the dream alive when they go out west to take on the red-hot L.A. Chargers coming up on Sunday. And, Demon, I'm sure.
Yeah, wrong team to play at the wrong time, Bob France.
No question about it. By the way, I still hate the Chargers because they're the ones who ruined last year's perfect 0-16 mark for the Browns. So, we could be looking at something way, way, way worse than the 76-77 Buccaneers, and they already have in a bigger picture 4-44 out of the last 48. But we could be looking at back-to-back 0-16s, which would just be historic and comical and all of the above. And that's what they deserve. They deserve every inch of their pain because they're doing this to the fans. D-Man, thank you, my friend. Appreciate the time.
You got it, bud.
All right, there you go. Dennis Maniloff joining us. You know what else I appreciate? I appreciate getting the chance to stay home. Sometimes you have to stay home, though, you know, because of reasons. Dog reasons, work reasons, binge-watching TV reasons, whatever the reason is. Sometimes you just don't want to leave the house. Know that B-Dubs offers online ordering for takeout so that when life makes you stay put, you can stay put with some great food in front of you. That's right. Just download the new app from Buffalo Wild Wings and customize your order. Save your favorites like wings spun in one of 21 signature sauces or seasonings. And then schedule one to pick it up. Return to your domain, your fortress of solitude. Sit back and relax and stay home with Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. All right. We are guest-free in hour number two. So after the top of the hour, local sports center from Cush, we're going to talk more about what happened last night with the College Football Playoff Committee rankings and to find out exactly what is the most likely scenario coming up after championship Saturday when all the conference championship games will be played. Want your input on all of the above as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we look at everything from the performance on the field that we're watching these games each and every week to strength of schedule to quality wins. And then the losses do come into discussion. They are a factor as we study the resume. They're on the table for discussion and we do analyze those losses. So do they matter? Yes, they do matter. Many times when we are looking at comparable teams, it's hard to differentiate. And at those times through our protocol, the commissioners have said we give you four metrics to look at: conference championships, strength of schedule, head-to-head matchups, and results against common opponents. And it's subjective based upon each of the 13 members of the selection committees. When we look at comparable teams, conference championships will be a factor in that equation for separation.
How do you put in Bama and you don't put in Auburn? I know it's 3-1 losses, but if you're a Bama fan, you're rooting for Auburn this week. I mean, I know you can't do it, and everyone says, oh, I would never do it. I'd rather die than do that.
I think if you look at what the committee is going to be looking at, Ohio State on paper would have the advantage over Bama. The only way that Bama would go in over Ohio State is if collectively that committee said, we know Ohio State's a conference champ and Alabama's not. We just think that Alabama's better. So let's put Alabama in. That would be really the only way that they could put Alabama in. The difference is Ohio State had 3 wins in the final rankings over teams that were in the top 10. Alabama's best win right now is over LSU, who's sitting down at 17.
It was what I expected with the teams that really matter the most here, which is Alabama at 5, Ohio State at 8. I say they matter the most because the rest of it's pretty simple. Like, if the top 4 teams win, that's your playoff.
Ohio State could be sitting there punctuating its resume with a win against a top 4 team. And don't forget that Ohio State also has a top 10 win against Penn State, assuming they stay ranked in the top 10. And they also beat a ranked team in Michigan State. The question is, would those 3 wins help to negate or compensate for giving up 55 points in the loss to Iowa and the home loss to Oklahoma?
Kevin Love sold it and hit it for 3. Love sent it for 3. Love is near. Crowder steps into a 3. Line drive it. Kevin Love! He's everywhere now. The omnipresent Kevin Love.
LeBron with an easy steal. The trailer is Love.
Oh, he is going. Pop a shot on him. Dwayne Wade to the hole with ease. D-Wade just trying to do it to you. Heat.
Kevin Love wide open.
Got again. The audacity.
Finally missed one, but stayed after it. Sends it up.
And no! Kevin Love.
Here comes LeBron changing gears. Bumping and missing. Dying is fouled. He's going to get a tech. And he's out of here. LeBron James has just been ejected.
Frustration. That's all that is.
That's the first ejection of LeBron James' career.
Don't be deceived by the final score. Cavs led by as many as 34 and cruise home to a white and gold winner.
I got fouled and showed my frustration to the ref. He sent me to the locker room. I said what I had to say, and I moved on, but he decided I should get two of them. It is what it is. We got the win, and that's what's most important. I'm surprised I got two in a row, you know, because I said what I had to say, and I was moving on, and he decided to throw me out, but, you know, it is what it is.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Number two of the extravaganza rolling along here. Thanks for being with us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I want to open up phone lines for you right now, and I suggest you get in line because I want your thoughts on this. Am I being too hard on the Buckeyes for Iowa? I'm just going to lay it out. I cannot forgive the Ohio State Buckeyes for the loss to Iowa. Not just the loss to Iowa, quite obviously. I cannot forgive 55 God-blasted points put up against you by Iowa. A team that would get rolled at home in Iowa by Purdue 2 weeks later. I can't forget that. I can't forgive that. I mean, it would be one thing, to be quite honestly, it would be one thing to just have the Oklahoma loss to deal with. After all, some would say it's early, and so you get a chance to erase that loss with a lot of great performances later. Okay, but it was still a two-touchdown loss at home. Not on the road, not in Norman, a hard place to play where you beat them last year, but in the shoe, man, in the shoe. But say, okay, we came back from that. We got better after that. We beat up weak teams. We beat up UNLV. We beat up Rutgers. We beat up Maryland. We beat up Nebraska. Then it took a comeback for the ages in a 13-for-13 from Barrett in the fourth to come back from down 18 against Penn State, but we did it. And after that comeback, we went to Iowa and gave up 55, the double nickel, to the Hawkeyes? Come on. A 31-point loss? I can't get past that. College Football Playoff Committee met last night, or not, I don't know when they meet, but they announced yesterday, last night, their latest decisions, their latest belief on who the best teams in college football are. And quite frankly, I think they're playing us for saps. I do. I think they're playing us for suckers. They're trying to get us, quite honestly, they're trying to get us to think that each of these weekly rankings that they do, and they do a total of six of them, I believe, are independent of one another and not dependent upon previous rankings. And I cannot believe that because we have seen time and time again teams going up and down based on recent performances are indeed, you know, reflected in the rankings, the coaches poll and the AP poll, as well as the College Football Playoff Committee poll. They are not independent and weekly, because if they were, you wouldn't have some of these strange occurrences that you do. But let me be specific about what they did, what they did and what they said yesterday when they came out with the college football playoff rankings. Your top four are moderately predictable. Moderately, I say. Because Clemson has been, you know, once Alabama lost and their undefeated record went by the wayside, Clemson has been the most dominant team and the most consistent team, even though they do have a bad loss. It's only a 3-point loss without their starting quarterback, by the way, on their resume. So Clemson ascended to the number one spot reasonably and predictably. What might be a little bit of a surprise to some is that two-loss Auburn ascended to the number two spot from number six. They went up four places. Over leapfrogging Oklahoma, which still has just the one loss, and over Wisconsin, which still has, well, no losses. Wisconsin's 12-0. They only went up one spot from five on the outside looking in to four being on are in the Final Four as things stand right now. Auburn leapfrogged Oklahoma and Wisconsin to go from 6-2. Can a two-loss team do that? Should a two-loss team do that? And the answer, of course, to that question is well, when you beat number one in the country twice in a matter of 4 weeks, yeah, you kind of do. When you're looking at Auburn and you see a team that beat number one Georgia just a couple of weeks ago, now in the Iron Bowl, beat number one Alabama, yeah, pretty easy to see how they ascended to number two. And you know what? If they beat Georgia again, one loss Georgia, by the way, still sitting at six in this ranking. If they do it to Georgia again in the SEC championship game, they may very well leapfrog Clemson to be the number one team and play the four in the semi-national semifinals. So Auburn, I think justifiably and rightly, outplayed their two losses to get to where they are now, and that is in the number two spot and potentially on the verge of the number one spot. Their two losses to number three Clemson, second week of the season, the same time, by the way, that Ohio State was beating or being rolled by Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield by 15 at home in the Shoe. That's when Auburn was on the road at Death Valley, losing one of their two, 14-6, to Clemson, the number one team right now. You might as well just call that not even a loss. It's easily wiped away by some great performances after. You're on the road in week two. It's an 8-point loss as opposed to being at home to the number what is now the number one team, which was then the number three team. Easily forgivable. Very different than losing by 15 at home at the Shoe to Oklahoma. But then the second loss, and this one is a little bit harder to defend, but it was also on the road in another Death Valley. Auburn's loss was to LSU, but they lost at LSU, and they lost by 4, not by 31. And so that matters in the big picture here. And to say that both of those losses by a combined 8 and 4, 12 points, to say that those could be very easily made up for by a 40-17 shellacking of number one Georgia, then a 26-14, 12-point win over Alabama, both number one at the time, and I'll get Georgia again. If they do this one, I mean, it's very clear. They have outplayed their two losses, much more so than we can say about Ohio State, and I just don't think there's any two ways about that. I want you to hear once again from Brad Edwards, one of the ESP analysts, making the case for the Buckeyes over the Crimson Tide. And we'll get into the Crimson Tide in a moment.
It was what I expected with the teams that really matter the most here, which is Alabama at 5, Ohio State at 8. I say they matter the most because the rest of it's pretty simple. Like, if the top four teams win, that's your playoff.
Ohio State.
And actually, that wasn't the clip that I wanted. My apologies. Let me see if I can get the clip I wanted. Maybe I wanted Herb Street instead.
Knew that.
I think if you looked at what the committee is going to be looking at, Ohio State on paper would have the advantage over Bama. The only way that Bama would go in over Ohio State is if collectively that committee said, we know Ohio State's a conference champ and Alabama's not. We just think that Alabama's better, so let's put Alabama in. That would be really the only way that they could put Alabama in.
Are you sure, Kirk? Are you sure that's the only way? Are you sure it wouldn't be another way? Are you sure that it wouldn't be because there's no way we believe Alabama would go into Iowa and lose by 31? You sure there isn't something more to this?
The difference is Ohio State had 3 wins in the final rankings over teams that were in the top 10. Alabama's best win right now.
That's not true, by the way. That's not true. Michigan State was number 13 at the time that they played, 12 against 13. That was not a top 10.
Alabama's best win right now is over LSU, who's sitting down at 17.
And that part is true. That is. If you're looking at the best wins when comparing Ohio State to Alabama, clearly it's Ohio State. They have better wins. If you're looking at worst losses, it's not even a competition. Alabama has just one loss. Ohio State has 2. Alabama's one loss was to the number 6 team in the country at the time they played in the Iron Bowl on the road. Ohio State's 2 losses came by a grand total of 46 points. Did I do my math right there, Kush? 31 and 15, right? 46
yep.
points? 46 points and 2 losses. One at home against Oklahoma, one on the road against an unranked opponent. One at the beginning of the season, one late in the season. If you're looking at bad losses, there's a reason why Ohio State is down at number 8 in this ranking this week, in the penultimate ranking. For those who don't know that word, it's the second to last ranking in the college football playoff committee. I didn't even read it to you, and I probably should have. This is where they stand at this particular point in time. Clemson, Auburn, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin, as mentioned. Bama is 5, falling 4 spots, just out of the top 4. Georgia is 6, going up 1 spot. Miami fell only from 2 to 7, so they are still a factor here, and if they win against Clemson in the ACC championship game, they will vault right back into the top 4, and they will be in, taking Clemson's spot. Then Ohio State at number 8. They, of course, have Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. Then Penn State and then USC. And one I cannot understand for the life of me, and I don't know if I ever will be able to, why this committee continues to snub USC in such a way. It's one thing to have them below Ohio State, and maybe that's just a matter of taste, even though the records and their strength of schedule show USC's 2 losses are also not as bad as Ohio State's 2 losses, including the blowout loss to Notre Dame, when you take them collectively. But how do they put USC below Penn State? Having a hard time with that. A 1-point loss to the Buckeyes, Penn State suffered. In that 3-game grinder, they had Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State back to back to back. They beat Michigan badly. Then they lost in a heartbreaker to Ohio State, 39-38. And then a field goal loss to still number 24, Michigan State. Their 2 losses are by a combined 4 points. Penn State's are, and that is certainly impressive. But if I compare that to what USC has done, as a potential conference champion, you know, everybody's talking about, well, Ohio State would have a conference championship, Alabama would not. If that same measurement applied here, well, USC, assuming they beat Stanford in the Pac-12 championship game on Saturday, would have a conference championship, and Penn State would not. So why is Penn State still getting the love from the committee over USC? USC has played a very, very difficult schedule. Their strength of schedule is one of their calling cards for, hey, how come we're not higher? And I think there's a very valid question that is asked there, and a very valid case to be made. USC's 2 losses, I mentioned, they got blown out by Notre Dame. We know that. But Notre Dame was 13 at the time when they got blown out on the road at South Bend. And then they lost to
Washington State on the road by a field goal.
By a field goal, which was 16. So they lost to 2 teams ranked in the top 16.
My only explanation
4 weeks apart, and I'm sorry, what?
My only explanation for the USC continuing thing is that the committee hates the Pac-12 this year. That's the
almost
only explanation that I could think of.
Almost every year, almost right. I mean,
true.
I mean, there's
Washington
such a bias.
Got in last year because they had 0 losses at the time.
I heard some analysis, Jim, by Joel Klatt earlier today. I mentioned he's a Fox Sports guy. And he made a point that I completely concur with and nobody really talks about. The bias against the West Coast, the Pac-12 teams in general, is so severe it has cost probably at least 2 different Stanford players Heisman trophies because of the people in the South, because of the devotion to Southern football, to the SEC territory. And it's because it's such a religion down there. And here's what I mean by that. Toby Gerhardt, remember Toby Gerhardt?
Yes, yes.
Led the nation in rushing, put up just monster numbers for a tremendous Rose Bowl Stanford team a few years back. And he did not win the Heisman. Why? Well, if you look at the regional breakdown of the votes, people down in the South, voters down in the South, and to particularly the Southeast, you know, the Southeast Conference areas, where they
right.
don't have pro football mostly. You know what I mean? Places like Alabama, they don't have pro football. Mississippi, they don't have pro football. Louisiana, they do have the Saints, but college football, you know, in that region
yeah.
of the country, it's just college football rules. They left Toby Gerhardt completely off the ballot. They didn't vote for him second or third. They just didn't put him on the ballot at all. It's kind
right.
of
I do
Justin
remember
Verlander,
that now.
What's that?
I do remember this now.
It's kind of like the reason Justin Verlander did not win the Cy Young Award, not this past season, but last season in 2016, because a couple of idiots, I think it was in Florida, wasn't it? Didn't even put him on their ballot, not second or third. If he gets a second or third place vote there, he wins.
Yep.
But he wasn't even on the ballot. As if, wait, he's not one of the top 12 or 15 that you actually put on your ballot? Are you kidding? They did the same thing last year to Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, the all-everything back at Stanford last year, should have won the Heisman Trophy. There's just no two ways about it. Lamar Jackson was terrific. But Christian or McCaffrey was every bit as good, and it would have been a much closer finish if not a Christian McCaffrey victory. But they didn't rank like Jackson 1, McCaffrey 2 down in the South. The voting patterns showed, you know, Lamar Jackson number 1. Where's he from? Louisville, down there in the South. Lamar Jackson 1, Christian McCaffrey not even on the ballot. Just not, it doesn't even appear there. If you even give him second or third or fourth place votes, he very likely surges past. So they just don't like the West Coast. And I'm not saying that the entire committee is made up of SEC honks or, you know, Southern voters that do that to the Heisman. But there is such a lack of respect for Pac-12 football in large part in the eastern part of the country and certainly in the southeastern part of the country. And I think that impacts why USC is not getting a really a fair shake here. If they become a two-loss champion, and they're going to have to beat ranked Stanford to do that in the Pac-12 championship.
And FYI, they did do that earlier in the year, just for reference.
Thank you. And by the way, Stanford is very, very good.
Yes, they are.
Stanford is very, very physical. And they're number 12 in the country now,
yep,
by the way, going into this game. So they're very well respected. If USC becomes a two-loss champion and doesn't get any higher than 10th or 9th the way they are now, it's going to be a crime, in my opinion. Because their strength of schedule is harder than Ohio State's. Their strength of schedule is certainly worth being over Penn State, who will not be a conference champion with their two losses. I just find that very, very hard to swallow. But the bottom line here, as I go to the phone calls, and I thank you so much for your patience. I want to get some calls in right now. But the bottom line here is if the top four in the rankings today, which are Clemson, Auburn, Oklahoma and Wisconsin, win their conference championship games. Debate is over. Those are your four teams in the Final Four in the college football national semifinals. A stumble by Oklahoma against TCU opens up a spot. A stumble perhaps by Auburn against Georgia opens up a spot, because Georgia would be in leapfrogging from six into one of those top four spots. Auburn would drop. There is a possibility that it's going to come down, not to Miami, now this is assuming a Clemson victory, but not to Miami, but Ohio State leapfrogging from eight into the top four. And that would be leapfrogging idle Alabama. And the arguments that would ensue, and you just heard some of them, Alabama did not have an extraordinarily strong schedule or a lot of quality wins. Ohio State has at least three quality wins toward the end of their season against Michigan State, against Michigan, if you call Michigan a quality win at the 8-4 where they are now, and I don't know how you want to view that. And then, of course, they would be beating Wisconsin, who is undefeated in the Big Ten championship game. Those would be those three quality wins. And the question is do three quality wins that Ohio State has that Alabama does not have trump two bad losses, one of them horrific and unforgivable, the 55-24 blowout loss, 31-point loss at Iowa, that Alabama does not have. Alabama's single loss would be to Auburn in the Iron Bowl in the rivalry game on the road. So that's ultimately the question here, and I want to know how people feel about it. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Fred in Wasiana has been waiting ever so patiently while I laid all of that out. I thank you for that, Fred, for hanging on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, no problem. I think if the Buckeyes are to make it in, I mean, they need to roll Wisconsin a la 2014. I mean, it's got to be like a 42-10 score or something.
Okay.
In order for them to have a chance
a lot,
to get
I
in,
think you're right. That
they need to, they just need to roll them. And this just in out of Tennessee.
Yeah.
It was proven that Jeff Brohm, their latest candidate, was a grad assistant the last time Louisville played Penn State. So now he's out. As Tennessee's next head coach. So.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's pretty disturbing. They're down to like their eighth or ninth or tenth choice down there now. It's
I hope they don't get anybody. You know, when I first heard Shiano was leaving, I'm like, oh God, that's going to suck right before Big Ten championship game. And now it's just, I don't know. They've totally screwed all that stuff up down there. And
yeah, they
it's
really
just
have.
A mess.
And you know what? We said this yesterday too, Fred. You know, to suggest that Shiano has something in his past that is unacceptable in terms of allowing him to work would be to suggest that Ohio State did not vet him. To suggest that the Buckeyes did not do their homework and that they're okay with the fact that he may have done something or had a role in covering up or whatever you want to say about that horrific thing at Penn State. And that to me is very insulting. If I was Ohio State, I would be very, very upset by that suggestion.
Yeah, I can't believe Urban Meyer would have hired him had there been any semblance of truth.
No,
to that being,
and that hire would, and that hire, of course, has to be approved by the athletic director and by the you know, the board, and
yeah,
all those things, you know, would probably be contingent upon, you know, a proper vetting of his resume, checking references, and so on and so forth to see if there's any reason not to hire him. And they did, and to me, that should be the end of the discussion. And but you know what, the Tennessee fans who threw that massive protest rally against Schiano, they just helped Ohio State because he is a very good assistant head coach and a very good defensive coach, and it's a great pairing with Urban Meyer.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right.
All right. Well, hey, thanks, Bob. Have a good show.
Thank you, my man. I appreciate the call. Good stuff. Let me go to Bill in Perrysburg. Bill, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for joining us. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment about the football playoffs.
Yes, sir.
When you got ESPN kind of running the football playoffs, it's kind of conspiracy for the ACC and SEC, because that's, you know, that's who mostly ESPN has on the television. And
I definitely agree with you on the SEC part. I don't know so much about the ACC part.
The ACC is kind of on a lower tier relative to the SEC. And don't forget, SEC football has the CBS thing, too. They're all over the place, really.
They are. They are. And let's be honest. I mean, you know, Alabama, these are high-profile. You know, I described what they do to the West Coast players when it comes to the Heisman and everything else. They are fanatical down there. If you think the Buckeye fans are fanatical in Columbus, it's nothing compared to the way they are down there. And that means ratings. So you're right. They play too.
Right.
I don't think there's any doubt ESPN plays to the Southern schools.
And don't be surprised if the winner of the SEC championship and Alabama get in the final
Well, I mean, if there is a spot that opens up, yes. If there's a spot that opens up by, let's say, Oklahoma losing to TCU, then yes, that spot probably would be filled by Alabama because, as I said before, you know, I mean, Ohio State would have a lot of overcoming to do because of that unforgivable loss to Iowa.
Yeah, well, I'm an Ohio State fan, and I can't even conceive them getting in. But
you know what? They've got a shot. They've got a shot because everything you said about the South is true about ESPN's proclivity to you know, to the SEC. But they also know that Ohio State is as big of a brand as there is. And if they want ratings in those national semifinal games, they could do a hell of a lot worse than Ohio State.
Yes, and you got a good point there because with Notre Dame down, well, Notre Dame out, they're not down, but they kind of out of it. Michigan's down. You kind of, as a draw, you just got Alabama and Ohio State. So one of them's got to get in. So
you're exactly right. One of them does have to get in, and I think, like I said, I mean, it's going to come down to one or the other. It's going to come down to Ohio State or Alabama, and whoever they don't pick is going to be livid and say that ESPN was biased against them.
Right.
That's just the way.
And then the Pac-10, nobody, they play a good brand of football, but nobody in the Midwest and East and the South really watches them or have a real big following as far as I know. And
no, you're 100% right, and that's why I talked about this in the first hour, and I don't know if you heard it, but about the committee members. And I got to run here, Bill. Thanks for the call. That's why I wanted to see who the committee members were and where they were from. And if you notice, Jim, very, very, very little representation from the West.
That's true. Yeah, I'm looking at the list right now. Again, the quote-unquote West. I'm saying it like that because I'm going to include Kirby Oka to Texas Tech, even though that's not really West.
Yeah, it's
and
not.
And then you scan down, and the
that's
only
Big
other one
12,
I
see. Heartland Country
right,
is
exactly.
What that is.
The only other one I see is Rob Mullins at Oregon.
The Oregon AD, that's right.
You Everybody else is East
the
or
committee
South.
Is made up of the Texas Tech AD, Frank Beamer, former Va Tech coach, Jeff Bauer, former Southern Miss coach, Herb Deramidi, former Central Michigan coach, Chris Howard, president at Robert Morris University,
and by the way,
Johnson,
I did
former Vanderbilt coach, Tom Jernstedt, former NCAA executive VP, so there's not a regional bias there.
Right.
Jeff Long from Arkansas, which is, you know, kind of central U.S. Rob Mullins, the only one out there on the coast. Clemson AD Dan Radakovich, Gene Smith from Ohio State, of course, Steve Weiberg, former USA Today reporter, and Tyrone Willingham, former Notre Dame coach. You could say he used to coach Stanford,
yes.
So maybe, but point being, people on the East Coast, he's right, the last caller's right.
Yep.
People on the East Coast and in our time zone don't watch a whole lot of Pac-12 football. Any primetime Pac-12 games out there are late, late night games here. It's like when the Tigers or Indians go west.
Yep.
It's very hard to see. And if they're playing, you know, in regular time out there, obviously we're watching, you know, games that impact us here
right.
in the Midwest, Big Ten country or whatever the case might be. So we don't see a lot of it. And in my opinion, Jim, the reason I brought all that up is the committee should be made up of a much more diverse body representing all regions of the country.
Yeah.
If there's 12, how many are there? 12? What were
they? 13, 2, 3, 4, I think.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So, okay. So you know, how about three of them from the West Coast?
Yeah.
About three of them from the East Coast? How about a couple from the South? How about a couple from the Midwest? How about a couple from the South, Central South, you know, Texas area? How about giving equal representation into all of those, regions of the country?
I like that idea.
Like there's a West Coast, anti-West Coast bias
yep.
going on here with Southern Cal not even getting a
start. I absolutely love that idea. And then to tag along on what we said last hour, we were first bringing up these names. Everybody needs to be a form or something because, yeah if you have
current
to...
Current ADs have no business being in.
Right, as Gene Smith is reportedly doing. If you have to recuse yourself from casting your vote as part of the committee, you shouldn't be on the committee. And by the way, side note, factoid, yes, Robert Morris does have FCS football. They finished 2-9 this year in the Northeast Conference, just FYI.
And their school president is on the committee, so just to throw that out there. Again, they're not really a factor. Let me get one more, and I know we're past our break here, but let me talk to Jimmy real quick before we get to the bottom or to our second sports center of the hour. Jimmy, go ahead, sir.
You know what? Anybody starting to miss the BCS?
No.
I got to tell you, honestly, wait a second. Hold on. I think the BCS is far less corrupt than this. I'll tell you what, I'd almost trade the BCS and just say, you know what, expand it to 4 or 6 on that instead of all this equivocation. Because I got to tell you again, you brought up all these wonderful points about USC and why are there. I mean, I'm a Buckeye fan. The Buckeyes don't belong, period, end of story, and there's every which way to justify it. They have no business being there, period, end of story. And basically – Penn State, why is Penn State getting screwed by Ohio State again? Because basically, you know, do they have 3 losses or something?
No,
or do they have 2? Okay, well, they lost by 1 point, and basically they're in the same position that Ohio State was in last year when they didn't win the conference championship. But what was the deal? Oh, Penn State, they won the head-to-head against Ohio State, right?
Yep.
And they won the conference championship.
Right.
Well, this year they lost to us by a stinking point. Well, we won. We haven't yet won the conference championship, but let's say we do. Well, okay. Well, we lost by 31 to Iowa, which is just as bad as them getting blown out by Michigan last year. So how in the heck do they not get in the conversation at all? Why is it Ohio? It's getting to where I'm kind of ashamed because the Buckeyes are being absolutely favored. It's
in
corrupt.
In the same way that Alabama is, in an unfair way. They have their favorites. The committee likes
Ohio it's almost more than Alabama.
Alabama.
It's more than Alabama.
What's that?
I'd say it's more than Alabama. I'll tell you what, if anything, Alabama's established the standard. Let's all sit here and let's admit it. We are all trying to be Alabama. We have a great history, a great brand, but everybody knows.
You're right, big picture, but small picture, small window here, Jimmy. And Jimmy, I got to run. Thanks for the
call. All right, brother.
But small picture, though, is this particular schedule, this particular edition of the Crimson Tide is not what that standard that you just described that they have set is. They don't have a quality win. Their best win is probably LSU. They don't have a tough schedule. You know, not that a lot of this is their fault. You do schedule your own non-conference games, and we know that. But the bottom line is this is not the strongest schedule and therefore strongest resume that Alabama has ever had. And now that they've got one loss, this is what the committee will decide. They will decide that if a spot opens up in the top four, should it be filled by one loss Alabama, whose only loss is a respectable one to Auburn, who was number 6, by 12 points. Do they get that spot, or does Ohio State get that spot, who has 2 losses, one of them unforgivable, a 31-point loss to an unranked team, but they would be showing that shiny conference championship ring, something Alabama would not have. And then that's where the debate comes in. What will the committee value more?
I do kind of disagree with Jimmy. I don't really miss the BCS. This is all a progression to get the playoff to 8. But I will give the BCS this. I sometimes wish there was a giant conglomerated computer ranking kind of thing.
Well,
that
that's what
used.
He said. Yeah. That's what he said.
That's
if you think about what
I'll
he
agree
just
with
said,
him
Jim,
on.
Jim, if you think about what Jimmy just said, he said, do you miss the BCS if we could expand it to the top 8? In other words, the BCS just spit out the top 2, taking the polls and then the Sagarin ratings and all the different computers that you just talked about, and they just said, okay, here are the top 2. You go play for the title. If we use the same system and said, here are the top 8, and now you go play for a title, I think that would be better than a top 8 decided by a bunch of corrupt, and I don't want to say corrupt in the worst sense of the word, but, you know, biased and
to pretend it's not there, though, is naive.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the partisanship or the bias that these current ADs, et cetera, are going to have in establishing these, not to mention television people influencing it because they're the ones who advertise and look for ratings, that's a problem with this committee. So if we could expand the committee to 8, I guess I'd be okay. You know, if the committee expanded it to 8 teams, that'd be okay. But to me, if we do go ahead and expand it to 8 teams, abandon the committee, and let's go back to, you know, the BCS formula.
Definitely. Looking back on it, it's one of the only things I liked about the BCS was that ranking system.
Right. By the way, the downside of that, and I know we got to get out here. My God, are we late. The downside of that, though, Jim, too, is if you remember what the biggest flaw in the BCS system was, to me, was the fact that it included and weighed so heavily on the polls. And as we know, the coaches' poll is a joke.
That's why it can't be included next time. Can't be. It has to be the AP and the other ones, but
not coaches. And the AP one, to me, isn't much better. The AP one isn't much better. It's better than the coaches' poll.
Yes.
But it is not reliable either. It's
agreed.
It's almost all got to be the computer algorithms, to me, to spit out the best teams back in the old BCS.
They do it here in Ohio for high school, and no one ever complains.
That is exactly right. Hey, you know, the cold weather is coming in Northwest Ohio. It is unavoidable, even though we've had a couple of nice days. What's this mean, though? It means it's time for a remote car starter from Car Stereo One. Stop in and ask about starting your car with your own smartphone. And with no monthly fee, talk about a perfect Christmas gift for yourself or someone you love. Or warm the backside of that someone special, or maybe your own, by getting a custom-installed seat heater. Now just $129. At Car Stereo One. How about Bluetooth streaming audio and a DVD movie screen from our friends at Pioneer? Not $300, not $200, just $156 at Car Stereo One. You can also choose full car window tinting, just $149. Car Stereo One, the best remote car starters and the lowest prices. Need directions? Log on to carstereo1.com. SportsCenter next.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We got a couple of minutes left to talk a little bit more about the college playoff rankings and what the committee did last night and what they will do after championship Saturday. Let's get Brett in Perrysburg on before we're done. Brett, thanks for being patient, man. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, one thing that they don't really talk about is injuries and how they play a role. You know, Ohio State, they do have one loss against Oklahoma, number 3 team in the country. But their other loss, they played without their captain on defense and their number one receiver on offense. They were both out for that game. So
you're talking about for the Iowa game?
Yes.
Does that matter?
Well, injuries, they always give a little room for injuries.
Yeah, a little bit, but not 31 points worth. That's the thing. You know, I mean, if you're Ohio State and you're playing unranked Iowa, you should be able to play with your B team, your backups, and beat Iowa, or at least not lose by 31. The fact that they lost, you know, one defensive player and one receiver is irrelevant to the matter. They got blown out. They give up 55 points. And if the and here's my argument would be, and I don't care if it's Ohio State or if it's Alabama, if it's Penn State or anybody else, if your defense is so dependent upon one guy, that if he's gone, you give up 55 to an unranked team, then your defense isn't very good at all. That would be my argument. One guy should not make a difference between beating an unranked team and giving up 55 points to one. That's a problem.
I don't disagree. You make a good point. But they do use that as a key factor when they're ranking the teams, especially towards the end of the season. You know, Ohio State, if they win this week, will be the only team in the country with 3 top 12 wins.
Correct. That is correct. And this is where the committee has to say, do three top 12 wins trump a blowout loss at home by two touchdowns in your own building and then a blowout loss on the road by 31 points to an unranked team? And in my estimation, the latter is unforgivable. You might even be able to forgive the Oklahoma game, but the latter, late in the season, too. It wasn't like this is back in September. The season that for the Iowa thing to happen, it's simply unforgivable. I cannot imagine any of the other top 10 teams in the college football playoff ranking as of last night, any of them going to Iowa and losing by 31. I just can't imagine it happening, and therefore that's why Ohio State has forfeited their spot.
And my last point, they want Alabama and Ohio State in that thing more than anybody else. So they'll do everything they can to make that happen.
That's exactly right. We'll see. They'll get one. You know, as long as if the top four teams win, by the way, of course, then it's it. There it is. But if they don't and there's an opening, you better believe they'll at least get one of them in. They'll get Alabama or Ohio State in because that means buku bucks from the ratings. There's no question about that. Thank you, my man. Appreciate the call, Brett. Good stuff. We got to go. We got to get out of the way because Mike Miller will not be held back. Drive Time coming your way next. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.